This podcast is about unsolved mysteries. Whenever possible, Mark and Kim have participated in recreating the events. What you are about to hear is not a news broadcast.
Tonight on Unsolved Mysteries Rewind, two friends get together to discuss episodes of their favorite television show, Unsolved Mysteries. Will they find answers? Will anyone care? You may be able to solve a mystery.
Hello, you are listening to Unsolved Mysteries Rewind. My name is Mark and I'm on with Kim. How are you, Kim?
I'm great, thanks. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing very well. This is an episode that I had chosen because it talked about the Amish. There are no Amish to be found.
No.
But there are a lot of very interesting things, including the death of a rock star.
Yeah.
A hostage murder, which would have been a religious hostage murder, maybe. Terror by the Book, which is kind of a foreshadowing, somebody who had a little Nostradamus in him, maybe.
Perhaps.
Home invasion spree, which I think is horrifying. It's very scary. We'll even get to the point where a son says, well, I thought Dad was dead. You know, it's like, all right, let's just move on because he's not. And Ripley's Believe It or Not, which I feel as though is a little bit of a commercial here.
Yeah, but it's weird because I would think that Ripley's Believe It or Not and Unsolved Mysteries are kind of enemies, not plugging each other.
I know a little bit about Ripley's Believe It or Not. A friend of mine was doing a lot of purchasing for them, but not when it comes to this kind of weird stuff. What he was buying is a lot of the Ripley's Believe It or Not literature and the memorabilia of the 60s and 70s. For whatever reason, Ripley's did not have in their possession an archive of these things. So he would, in the early, you know, when eBay was a new thing, he would be scouring and they would give him a budget and he would actually get paid for this, which is pretty cool. Yeah. Ripley's was a very, it still is, it's a very confused company. They don't know what their focus is. When Robert Ripley died, and this has nothing to do with Robert Ripley this episode, but he's another fascinating individual when it comes to everything. I don't know if you've looked into Robert Ripley's world, but it's a fascinating one.
Okay.
But they don't seem to have a very wonderful focus except to just present things that are strange. But when Robert Ripley died, his legacy really kind of went with it. One more sideshowy. I was just recently at the Ripley's Museum this past summer in Canada. And although it's a decent museum, it's fun and everything, it's really kind of a little corny when it should be a little bit more about adventure, more Indiana Jones. But instead, it's kind of like, look at this, you know, sit in the tallest man's chair, you know, that type of thing. Mm. A little bit much, but they do make money. They are an interesting company. I wouldn't say that they were competitors. I would say more along the lines of Ripley's is a competitor with things like the Guinness Book of World Records. But I understand why you would say it. But anyway, they talk about the fertility statues and that, which are still on tour, by the way.
Yes.
So did you want to kind of jump into this one? Because the death of a rock star has a lot of inconsistent information about it.
Now, I'm going to go out here and preface this by saying that I have so 100% made up my mind about what happened here.
Yes, that, I can see that.
Yeah, it was hard for me to take in any information. Like, I only took in confirmation bias information.
Just to preface, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that if you're not accurate, you're not accurate about something that's extremely minor.
Yeah, like I've been telling my poor husband, you see, that's another, like, this poor guy I've been telling for the last week. Like,
it's like a scene out of JFK. Wait. Yeah. No, it's not possible.
I'm so positive. And I have facts, again, that even you don't know about. So I will throw down with your theories. But let's start in July of 1966.
Now, is Bobby Fuller on your radar? Are you familiar with his music?
I know the song I Fought the Law, The Law Won, and I've listened to it like 10 times in preparation for this podcast, and it's good. I forgot how good it was.
Bobby Fuller was one of these guys when I was growing up that, because I was really into this era of music, like before the Hendrixes and stuff. And I always enjoyed like the music of the late 50s. So he was, in my opinion, this might piss people off, but a bit of a joke. Because he's a really, really great song cover guy. He can really, really perform really well, a great copy of other people. And with the exception of I Fought the Law, which is it's a bit of a Buddy Holly ripoff, he's a good guitarist. Like, he knows how to fake it really nicely. And it's what happens to a lot of guys. He just did find a little bit of success. I don't think that Bobby Fuller 4... The Bobby Fuller 4 would have really gone on to be the next anything. You know, I just didn't. Their material's really not there. So anyway, that's it.
Yeah, and his brother's like, he was on track to be the next Elvis. But, you know, it's easy to say that when they die young and you never really get their full potential, you know. So he is, in July of 1966, he is found dead in his car.
Yeah.
There, he was in the passenger seat, so his butt was in the passenger seat, but his head was kind of slumped over onto the driver's seat. There was blood that kind of saturated the seat and his shirt. Some people said that he looked beat up. Apparently, he had a broken finger, and he also had what was described as bruising all over his face, let alone all the blood on his face and shirt. But I think that that's kind of post-mortem lividity.
Sure. I think it's pretty easily, you can be easily bruised when you pass away, can't you? Is that what that means?
Well, the lividity is like how the blood pools in your body after death. So if somebody hangs themselves, then their feet are like dark purple, just because that's just how the blood settles in the body. Mm-hmm. And then you have petechial hemorrhages, which are kind of like almost like under the surface blood blisters is kind of how they look. But if you were a layperson and you just happened to see this guy getting carted out onto a gurney, you'd be like, oh, that guy looks like he's got the crap beat out of him. So they find a gas can on the wheel well, and his whole body is soaked in gasoline. But there's no indication that anybody like tried to throw a lit cigarette in or tried to burn him up in any way. It's just gasoline is spilled on him.
Right. Like in Goodfellas, for instance, they're pouring gasoline around everything and then they light it. Exactly. You don't really pour the gasoline and then leave it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so the coroner, when they get there, they're like, oh, it's obvious what happened. He killed himself by drinking gasoline, which is kind of a crazy theory. It's not super common, I would think, that people would kill themselves through drinking gasoline. Mm-hmm. We have amateur psychologist Casey Kasem saying.
But legendary Casey Kasem. It's amazing. I love his voice.
Oh, he is amazing, but he's like, oh, this guy would never commit suicide, and you can take that to the bank. It's like, well, you can't really call for the operation of his mind, and I know a lot of people who know suicide victims closely, and they say they never would have done this, you know? You hear about it all the time on, like, murder shows.
Can I just ask you something? Did you happen to watch any live performances with Bobby Fuller? You might notice this. He's kind of a fat face. Right. Maybe even an alcoholic's face, you know, like kind of like a bit bloated because he doesn't look chubby. I mean, he's not like svelte, but which is my Yiddish of the day. But he's not scrawny or anything, but his face just looks kind of like
puffy.
Yeah. Like maybe a cucumber mask might help. And he's young. He's in his early 20s here. He's even earlier. I mean, the videos, who knows how old. Maybe he was even like 20 because it's before he was really big. And I don't know. I would imagine that it's possible that when maybe he had a really bad alcohol problem and that might affect certain things. Also, when you're going to your theory of huffing gasoline, couldn't he have just banged his face? It just makes so much more sense to me that he would look beaten up because maybe he was, you know, beaten up a little bit, not by somebody beating him up, but because he's playing rough, you know.
And maybe when he passed out, he hit his head on the steering wheel, or who knows, and that could have led to the blood. So my theory is that he was huffing gasoline to get high. Now, the reasons that I have to show my work is that they found no sign of gasoline in his esophagus, in his stomach, and on Unsolved Mysteries, they say that they found no drugs in his system, but what they tested for was only barbiturates, so right. That wouldn't gasoline would not show up on there. The reason why I'm saying that it's gasoline, there's obviously the gas in the car.
I just have to tell you, I could see your cursor right now. You just scrolled down to the Sally Fields thing. That is crazy. I didn't know that it was that live.
Oh, weird. Yeah. So we're on a shared Google Docs right now. So another reason why I think that is because suffocation from inhalant abuse actually completely replaces the oxygen in your lung with the particles of the inhalants. Mm-hmm. And that's not something that they were really testing for. Here's an otherwise healthy young 20s guy just in his car. And let's see what else I had. They said that he was having behavioral changes. Like he was getting super angry with his Bob Keane, his music producer. And that could be from inhaling abuse. Now, the number one reason I think this, and again, this is just confirmation bias on my theory, is in 2015, Randy Fuller, who is Bobby Fuller's brother, a member of the Bobby Fuller Four, and somebody who we see on Unsolved Mysteries, he gave an interview in 2015 saying that Bobby walked in on Randy huffing gasoline one time, and Bobby said, "Oh, what are you doing with that? That's the leaded. Don't you know you're supposed to do the unleaded?"
Oh, God.
So that to me all says that he was having gasoline, which I'm not passing any judgment. Do you? I really don't care. But it's just, that's where it all lines up.
Now, I love the smell of gas. I don't know why. If I get one whiff of it, you know, I'm like, ooh, I like it. But then I think, oh, it's toxic, you know, so I'm not going to be around it so much. I'm working on different cars. I'm around all of these fumes a lot. And it can get to you extremely quickly. I think I've explained in the past that I'll test my levels of being able to stay around carbon monoxide for too long, which I don't really do. It's not something that I find to be habitual. But it's weird with gasoline. Gasoline has that kind of weird smell to it. I couldn't imagine huffing it, which is what I think people also do with airplane glue, where they just basically, you just keep breathing it in, right? I mean, is there a method that you read about?
No, there's not a method I've read about. I have seen my share of intervention. Right. I've seen people like straight up huff silver spray paint. Like it's nothing is like.
And that air, the compressed air as well. I've seen
the keyboard cleaner.
Yeah.
But nothing to, I don't look at that and go, oh, I want to huff that. So obviously something weird in these people's brains that makes them want to do this. But when I have seen on interventions, they just like put it in their mouth and push down.
It's crazy. It's just crazy because he's also living in L.A., right? He's in the late 60s. You could get drugs on some level. It might not be as prevalent as today, but.
Well, Bob Keane tries to posit the theory that LSD killed him.
I don't think you can die from LSD.
No, I looked it up and they said that it's one of the drugs with the most notoriously low toxicity levels. LSD, they're like, it'll mess you up. You could have a really bad trip, but it's not likely to kill you. And he said, you know, he thinks he was at a party with this mysterious blonde Melody and that something happened. And because there was a bunch of celebrities there, they wanted to cover it up. So I do think that he was in the passenger seat. I think that there were drugs going on. I think somebody kind of rolled the car in and then ran away because there was an accident. They didn't want to bring a lot of attention to it. But I think that was probably the inhaling gas, and that's why he was slumped over onto the driver's side seat.
Now, if you watch this show itself, you think he lives in a small house, right? But he actually lived in an apartment.
Yeah.
And I found the actual house. I found that actually if you have an interest of getting a one bedroom in L.A. right now, it's really not that bad. It's about $2,000 a month.
Whew.
Well, you know, I mean, for a big city, it's really not that bad.
No, for LA, that's not bad. Yeah. But out here, I'm like a little country mouse and that's so expensive.
Yeah. But, you know, it's one of these things where, all right, well, I looked around and I didn't see the place having its own parking. It's really a parking on the street type of situation, unless mm-hmm. there was construction. But the buildings, when I went to the Google Street Map, it looks like the other buildings might even be older. So there is no parking lot. And I found a couple little things that just seem strange. For instance, I believe it was 5 p.m. that the mother walked out and saw her son in the car, right?
Yeah, she was supposedly checking every half an hour, and it wasn't when at 5 o'clock she saw it, where at 4:30 she didn't.
So I read that from AP News that he left to get a bite to eat. After having a couple of beers, he often did that, his mother said. And the next morning, Fuller failed to show up at the recording studio, and Mrs. Fuller went out to get the mail and saw the Oldsmobile. Mm. So, you know, that's kind of a strange little inconsistency that, you know, we're hearing that it's 5 p.m., but it's really the next morning. And mm-hmm. it's, why is his mother living with him?
I don't know. They said she was visiting.
Oh, okay.
That on Unsolved Mysteries, they said she was, like, visiting from Texas or something.
But, you know, I think that... I believe it was your theory that Melody possibly parked the car.
Yeah, there was a lot of like, oh, Melody used to be boyfriends with a mobster, and maybe the mobster saw them having their secret affair. And
it makes for a fun story, but I think you're right. I think he was huffing gasoline, kind of like a real low class type of drug. I would think, no mm-hmm. opinions, but I would think that if you're huffing gas, you probably aren't listening to this podcast. but maybe you should. So I just think it adds to a story. Mm-hmm. It makes it more exciting that a mobster could have been involved through one degree of separation.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think this was, he died, she panicked, and maybe even just dumped the car.
Yeah, to me, it's just one of those Occam's razor things. Like, the most straightforward answer is just the one that makes sense. It's the one that it is.
If only he was 27, he would be a part of that Rockstar 27 club.
Well, if you notice, he looks pretty old for a 23-year-old. Yes. And apparently Bob Keane changed his age to try and get the teeny boppers in.
Really? So how old is he really?
Well, they said that they think that he was off by 2 years, so that he would have been 25.
Two more years.
There's a whole lot of information out there about Bobby Fuller that I learned that's a little salacious.
What? Bobby Fuller?
I know. Well, apparently he had gotten his girlfriend pregnant. This is not on Unsolved Mysteries. This is just on my research. He'd gotten his girlfriend pregnant, and his girlfriend was like, so we're going to get married, right? He was like, oh, I can't let down my fans. Like, I need to look single and hot so people keep buying my records. Mm-hmm. So he's like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to hop the border to Juarez and get you like a back alley abortion. And so she goes, classic. Okay, I know, right?
a real charmer, this one.
I know, that's why I feel bad. No disrespect to the dead, but this is his story. So she's like, okay, I'll get this abortion if you promise to marry me. So he's like, oh, no, I didn't promise to marry you. Like, that's not what I want to do. How about this? I'll set you up with my friend who's desperate to get married, and then you pass off the baby as his. Like, just jump into bed with him real quick. So he thinks that this could be his baby. So she goes, okay. So she does. They get married. They're married for like a few years. And then she takes the baby to go see a Bobby Fuller concert. And she's like, oh, Bobby, I'd like you to meet your daughter, who's like two now. And he's like, oh, my God, what? And she's wrote him a letter that was like, I want to be married. I want the three of us to be a family. And apparently that note was found on or near him when he died. So they were thinking maybe that's why he committed suicide. But I don't think this was a suicide at all.
No, I think this was, I need to get high right now.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe that kind of note would precipitate you wanting to get high. I don't know.
I do have to get high right now. No. But I just think it's really, it is a sad story, but with all of these things, there's so much more to go into it. If you go on YouTube, there are hours upon hours of other discussions about this. Mm. So there is so much to be learned. I think we've really summed it up though. I don't think that it was I genuinely feel, and I think you feel this way, that it was pretty much 100% accidental.
Yeah.
And you probably had the windows closed, you know, and you're huffing, you have open gas. Ugh.
In July in California, it's hot, vapors. But there is an update that the coroner, after the episode aired, changed the death from suicide to accidental. And it said that the family hopes that new technology will help them if they exhume the body to do more testing. So that's where we stand with Bobby Fuller.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can't blame people for wanting to, one, have the correct determination of why this person died. But I think that they might have also learned of the success of the movie La Bamba. Mm. And, you know, these stories sell for a lot of money. And I'm just wondering, could it be, I mean, is that really me just thinking very poorly of people that they want to use a really terrible experience to cash in?
Well, La Bamba's Ritchie Valens, isn't it?
Ritchie Valens.
Valens, whose producer was?
Yeah, Bob Keane.
Mm-hmm, the same producer, Bobby Fuller.
But Bob Keane also, you know, Bob Keane also discovered Sam Cooke. Really, who really legendary.
Mysteriously.
Yeah, so maybe we need to look into Bob Keane.
Honestly, he did seem a little sleazy. He's dead now. Rest in peace. I'm sorry. But he did seem like that kind of record producer who like would get stuff done no matter what.
I have to agree with you a little bit on that. But he was played by Joe Pantaleone.
Ugh, I know, who's like the creepiest scumbag in Sopranos. He plays Ralphie.
I love Sopranos. I haven't seen it in a long time, though.
Ralphie's so skeezy.
But he's a very good actor. But it's weird. He wears those like flowery shirts, and in real life, Bob Keane, have you ever seen the movie La Bamba? Mm-mm. It's worth seeing. If you want a little primer of late 50s Mexican rock, yes, it's pretty good. Actually, I don't believe he was Mexican. I think that's like a big part of it. They get like all uppity because he doesn't even speak Spanish. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of weird shadiness. This is also a very weird time to become a celebrity in this because of all of the scandals that were going on in rock and roll. Mm-hmm. Everybody, I guess, wanted to be the next big success. Of course, at the end of La Bamba, what's so shady about that is you have the big bopper, Ritchie Valens, and almost said Woody Allen, and Buddy Holly. All crash in a plane on their way to a show, and they all die. I think that was 1958. I think that was like the big launch of rock and roll. And I think maybe Bobby Fuller got caught up in that, and he was a big fan of all of them except for the Big Bopper.
Yeah, It sounds like he really was. They said that his idol was Buddy Holly. He wanted to be the next Buddy Holly. So
yeah, you know, have you ever heard of surf music, like Dick Dale? Bobby Fuller actually can emulate that very, very well. You can find it on YouTube. And it's not an easy technique at all. This is why I give him credit for being able to play other people's music. Mm-hmm. But that's a very, very difficult technique to learn or teach. So he was a very natural musician. I just I don't know if he had the star power to be an Elvis, personally.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy, like I said, it's easy to say something like that when the person's cut down in the prime of their life. Then they could have gone on to a million different things. You have no idea. So it makes sense that his brother who said that is going to want to idolize him and stuff like that. You see it a lot when somebody is cut down so young.
And he had a good song. I Fought the Law is a halfway decent song.
Yeah.
But all of his songs, I wrote this in the notes, they're all the same tempo. That's a big pet peeve of mine. They all, and a lot of them are all in the same key of A, and I don't know, just it's not, I appreciate it. I think it's good. I just think maybe he would have brought more to the table, but I think we can let Bobby rest in peace finally here.
Yeah, I hope so.
So that brings us to the next story, which is, I'm scrolling, the hostage murder. I'm going to call it the religious hostage murder.
I think that's fair.
Or the cultish, maybe the beginning of a cult here.
Yeah, definitely somebody that had the power to become a cult leader.
So we have, the suspect is David Freeman.
Yes.
And David Freeman is hired as a basic handyman. Like, you know, this guy, Tim Good, he has some property and he brings David Freeman in. And they have this weird role reversal that happens really quickly on the show.
Yeah, and slowly but surely through preaching, David begins to exhibit this kind of like mind control over Tim, where Tim begins to work for David, and David like gets the run of the house, and he's like, oh, the Bible says, you know, if you don't work, you don't eat, so go ahead and chop up some wood. And he's basically using the Bible to completely manipulate this guy, Tim Good, into doing whatever he wants.
And this is over the course of about 5 years. But on the show, it's kind of humorous to see it happen because it happens in a matter of 30 seconds.
Exactly. And this is an update. So there is a deeper story, and it's probably more sprawled out on a different episode. But in this episode, they're giving it to us fast and furious.
Yeah. We see that Tim Good probably, I don't know what Tim Good's full focus is, but he seems to be really on his own. Is that a fact? I mean, I don't know if that passed by me.
He had taken in like a 15-year-old kid who was kind of kicked out of the house by his parents, and he put him to work on the farm. His name was Jane. Mm-hmm. So it was basically the two of them where he was almost like a guardian over Jane. And they said that Tim kind of got in David's business because David locked Jane out of the house. And when Jane tried to enter the house where he actually lived, David pulled a weapon on him and assaulted him. And Tim had to step in and go, whoa, Gene has a right to live here too. It's his house too.
Right. I don't know what was going on there. I feel like we're missing a little bit of the story. Maybe you dug it up, knowing you, it's your style. but we see Tim is all of a sudden being relegated to a part of his house that is really just a storeroom at this point with cinder block walls.
Yeah, this is like a dank, dark basement. Well, David lives upstairs with his wife and kids in the lap of luxury. And right, they said
it was the only thing missing. I'm sorry. I could just picture them all playing like Nintendo or something like that. And yeah, like making s'mores. And he's down there like reading the Bible with, a weak light bulb.
Exactly. There's like flickering on and off. Right. But they said like he would determine what Tim could eat, if Tim could even eat that day. So it was just crazy abusive behavior and just a really odd thing to happen. So suddenly we're not really seeing David around, or sorry, we're not seeing Tim around so much. It's been about 7 months. Sorry.
Do you think there's more to this though? There seems to be, I mean, for somebody to follow one person, they have to be really, really into, like there seems to be almost a love or a dedication by Tim. Mm-hmm. Towards David, and they don't really convey, it doesn't come across on the show, but you know, he's kind of like a dog, like he's very reliant on this person who essentially works for him.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I always kind of leave the possibility open for something like that. I mean, who knows? Is it possible maybe there was a romantic thing going on? Who knows? But it seems like Tim Good, and I've seen the picture of him, and he just seems like such a nice guy. It just seems like he was a good person, and when you're a good person, you're not up to the tricks of bad people. Like, that's not even on your radar. So I think that David was just a really convincing con man, and he just completely had Tim under his fingers.
Yeah, I guess over the course of time, it's just really easy when you know how to manipulate.
Yeah, and like you said, it's probably about 5 years. They're living together, they're working together, they're eating together. It's everything. This guy's whole world.
Yeah, so, it's pretty shocking when you see them portraying it, because he's in this little tiny, like maybe 8 foot by 10 foot room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's basically prison.
Literally, I mean, it really looks like it. There's no window. It's
like an old-timey prison, like in a castle or something.
It's a dank basement.
Yeah, and they say that David Freeman has like a wet bar, jacuzzi, 3 big screen TVs. Like, he is just spending Tim's money. And apparently Tim confronted David on this, and David strangled him. So Tim is dead. The neighbors haven't seen Tim for like 7 months. So they're kind of poking around. They're like asking questions. Where's Tim? Where's Tim? Now, after 8 months, the cops came. And I was wondering how the cops knew to come. Did you look this up?
No, I didn't. I don't know how 8 months goes by without wellness checks, property taxes have to be paid. There are a number of things that are still in Tim's name, I'm assuming.
Right, but Tim was so isolated from family and friends, and they actually completely moved to West Virginia. So it's a lot of these neighbors didn't know him, didn't have a relationship with him enough to do a welfare check. Maybe he's just a hermit that lives up there. So the house has been abandoned for 1 month. After the 7 month mark of Tim being dead, David and his family leave town. So after 1 month of this beautiful house sitting vacant, this guy goes in and decides, oh, I'm going to rob that house. Yeah. So he breaks into the house and he goes to rob it and he kicks in the basement door and sees Tim's like very badly decomposed body in there.
I think he smelled it, if you want my opinion.
Well, probably did. And he was like, holy crap. So he actually, the robber actually called 911 and was like, you guys better check this out. Now, they did mention that in the vents, they were all closed off and stuffed with like air fresheners and stuff like that to try and keep the smell down.
Why not burn the house at this point? Eventually, that's going to, it's evidence, right? I mean, I guess maybe a fire is just so much more dramatic, but.
Yeah. And if you're trying to leave like a thief in the night, you're not really wanting to draw that attention to it. And
you sound so like you know quite a bit about this.
You know what? Don't worry about it.
I'm not going to poke. Nope.
Yeah, so we actually meet somebody named Keely Shea Smith, who refers to National Treasure Robert Stack as Bob. Which I
have
found
the clip. If you just want to hear her call him Bob, just to kind of right up your spine. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I almost played the clip without it being plugged in. And then you would have been pissed off at me, as usual. All right.
Bob, our viewer phoned in the crucial tip while the show was still on the air. He knew Freeman as William David Cooper, an auto mechanic. Cooper had recently worked on the caller's car and made an unforgettable impression.
So, Bob.
I don't care for it.
No, me either.
Some respect.
I don't like her hair either. And I know she is married to one of the better Bonds.
Pierce Brosnan.
I like Pierce Brosnan. Yeah. One of those actors. I don't know. I can't dislike him.
Yeah, he seems like a nice guy.
Which means he's next. He's next to go down.
Me too.
But yeah, I don't know if I recall ever seeing her before or these little segments popping up on Unsolved Mysteries.
They're definitely part of the later years. Like,
okay.
Not something in the beginning, but they definitely have somebody like in front of people like, oh, well, what? Like they're getting calls right at the moment. You know, they're standing in front. It's very put on. It's a big production. So
don't call him Robert, just call him Bob.
Oh, I hate it. It was like, ooh, I don't know, that doesn't sound right. But
yeah.
So they totally sell out one of their informants. I couldn't believe this. They were playing the exact call of the guy where the guy gives his voice, he gives the description of how he knows David Freeman, and which leads to David Freeman's arrest. So if you don't think David Freeman knows exactly who that is, I mean, come on, it's obvious.
You know, one thing, I have a very bad habit of this, but we have to remember to kind of do this, is in the beginning, mention what episode we're talking about numerically.
Oh my God.
So yeah, this is season 9, episode 3. I can always pop it into the beginning, but I just realized we're not saying it. But if you go on Prime, this is season 9, episode 3.
Thank you. Good call.
And we don't have an exact date on this as usual, because that's just the way things are.
Yeah, so we get to see like cop footage of them staking out David Freeman, and they realize he's got kids in the house. So they decide to wait until he's a little farther away from the house, and they arrest him. And for the murder of Tim Good, he does only 10 years.
Yeah. Like I feel, well, you mentioned, you think it might be a plea.
Yeah, it has to be a plea for torture and murder. And also, I read allegedly that he is also a suspect in the murder of his own two children.
Jeez.
David Freeman. Yeah, and he actually just recently died in 2019 in Jacksonville, Florida, not too far away from where I am. And there's a website called dignitymemorial.com where they have just loving tributes to this man. Like, oh, he never met a stranger. He could light up a room. And these people from tvsitcoms.com, which is like has a forum about unsolved mysteries.
Yeah.
Apparently they went over and kind of spammed his memorial with a ton of horrible comments. I know, which isn't cool, but it was kind of funny. But Yeah, I couldn't believe how lovingly they described him. And I found his wife on Facebook and everything. Yeah. I'm not going to stalk her or anything, but I don't know. I don't like this guy.
But you know what? He's gone, and his wife is kind of moving forward. I saw that you sent me the link to her Facebook. Seems to be happy. Seems to be moving forward. I hope she has a beau.
Oh, well, and I'm sorry. I meant to say 2018. I think I said 2019 is when he died from complications from ALS.
Right. You know, I'm sure the guy had some level of positive something in his life, but this thing that happened is really scary to me. The way that people can be so manipulated, and I don't know. I just think there's more to it.
And he was just all alone on his farm, and he just wanted a friend, and this is what happened. It's just tragic.
So, Terror by the Book. Now, you mentioned that you do not recall the bombing in Atlanta at the Olympics.
No, I think I was like 7 when
it
happened.
Yeah, you were a child.
It was not on my radar at all.
From what I recall, I came home. I was going through a pretty terrible relationship at the time, and I remember I came home and I put on the TV. It was very late, and I saw that it happened, and I'm like, what, you know, what's going on? I'm watching it, and I don't know, I kind of remember it being the first big news thing that I started following. This became the news for the next several days, like 24-hour news, and people really started focusing deeply on who could have done this. Why did they do this? And all of a sudden, Hotlanta was on everybody's radar. You know, mm-hmm. All of a sudden, people knew that there was a Coca-Cola factory and you could still buy a new Coke in Atlanta. But, you know, it was a very shocking thing for the entire nation. This was like a big, big, big deal.
Sure. For the whole world, I imagine. I mean, it's an Olympics thing where the world is all coming together. So I'm sure this was a big deal.
We are the world. Well, mm-hmm. I like that song. But we are, you know, we're so self-absorbed. I am so self-absorbed as an American. I can't really. I'm only curious as to how Europe would perceive this, you know. Mm. Like, good for them. I think all Europeans are pretty mad. So I don't. So we get on to the story goes quickly away from Atlanta to the theory of a fictional made up substance.
Right. Red Mercury, which is a book by the guy going under the pen name Max Barkley. And this whole thing was just a big, long commercial for his book, I thought.
Yes, I couldn't agree more, which I found the book on Amazon used. I don't think it's in print anymore.
That makes sense. Yeah, I could see. I saw a billion used copies too. But basically, in this book, he posits, and this is before the bombing, but he posits a bombing happening at the Atlanta Olympics. And it happened. So that's the Nostradamus, right?
Yeah, and he's like, I couldn't believe it. I was watching the news, and what I had written was coming to reality right in front of me. It's like, all right, calm down.
And you could buy it here, here, and here.
Right. And this is a different time. You know, it's another thing when I mentioned, when I saw this for the first time, it is shocking because this is, you know, before 9/11 happened. This is before the other World Trade Center thing happened. This is, you know, this is right before. I think this is, when was the first World Trade Center bombing?
Oh, God, I don't know. I'm going to say 93.
Was it 93? Okay.
I'll look it up.
All right. No, but I mean, these things are, they're not totally common. And when they do happen, they don't seem to be so dramatic. But you turn this on and it's starting to look like a third world country. Like the bombing was very scary looking, the outcome.
Yeah, no, totally. And it could have been a lot worse. But one of the security guards saw it and they actually were ushering people out. Mm-hmm. So it ended up killing 2 people, 1 directly through because it was like a pipe bomb with nails surrounding it, kind of like the Boston Marathon bomb.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It was like a pipe bomb with nails and 1 went through the skull of a woman. And then the other guy was actually a cameraman and he was running towards it and he had a heart attack. So they count that as one of the deaths, but it also injured 111 people.
No, we also get a description that it was a crudely constructed pipe bomb, but then we're saying, well, it was a blast large enough that there's a possibility of red mercury.
Well, no, no, no. They're saying,
no?
Oh, it could have been worse. It could have been red mercury.
All right. I kind of missed that because I keep thinking the bomb wasn't that big. I mean, it killed two people and it injured 111. That sounds about right for a regular pipe bomb.
Yeah. And they were saying that like a red mercury bomb is no bigger than the size of this softball. And then Robert Stack shows us a softball because we've never seen one before.
It's just weird. Here's this like white thing. Like, is it a softball? It doesn't look, it just looks like some type of weird sphere of some sort.
Yeah, he's like, this is a softball. Imagine somebody at 300, you know, Pennsylvania Avenue putting this down, and then it kills everyone with radiation within 600 yards. So they were just saying, like, it could have been worse, but this was a crudely, like, Alice Pack pipe bomb.
Now, this was also the period of time where people started talking about the suitcase bombs. I don't know if you ever heard about those. Mm-mm. It was like in Russia, they're making bombs, and they fit in a suitcase, and you just walk in and leave the suitcase, and you walk out, and it's a nuclear thing. And I'm thinking that red mercury was associated to this. It's a very exciting substance.
Is it real?
It's not real. It's a hoax. And in my opinion, if we would see much larger explosions, if this was real, then again, if it is real, maybe it's only a small substance, a small quantity of it that exists. I think I think it's a 100% hoax. I think that it's all just made up to kind of scare people. Boris Yeltsin supposedly authenticated, but that came out as a hoax as well, just to
this
kind of
whole thing
make
was
him
such
look silly.
Yeah. Sorry. It was such a fear-mongering video. At one point, they show Stalin just like firing a gun off into a crowd, like, and they show like Russian tanks and stuff, and it's just trying to get everybody freaked out. And they're like, a customs official wouldn't even notice it. X-rays can't get it. Dogs won't sniff it out. No,
not dogs. But yeah, I mean, they say this about so many other things. They're like, well, if somebody has a 3D printed gun, they could sneak it onto a plane. It's never happened. It's not going to happen, hopefully. And we do see we're bringing like, you know, Russia into it. We're spies, and there's a lot of fear here. But there is an update. There's an update because Eric Rudolph he pled guilty for the pipe bomb.
Yeah, in 2003.
Aside from him being a lunatic with a focus on, I mean, he bombed two abortion clinics and he seemed to have a real hatred of gays because he bombed a lesbian nightclub in Atlanta. Was his focus just purely hate people who are living and doing things that he doesn't personally agree with?
Well, okay, so he did the two abortion ones. Like you said, he accidentally killed an off-duty officer who was working there as a security guard on one of the abortion clinics. He did the lesbian nightclub, and he did the Olympics because of global socialism, is what he says. So he's just one of these whack jobs who, if I don't like it, then I have to kill it. Like, he's crazy. And he got sentenced to 4 consecutive life sentences. Now, there were 3 deaths that happened. So I'm guessing that the life sentences are one for each of the bombs. Mm. And I'm guessing the Olympics is probably a federal thing instead of by state. But he was sentenced to 4 consecutive life sentences. And his sister-in-law said this guy was so anti-government that the absolute worst thing that could happen to him is him be under the government's control for the rest of his life. She said it was for him a fate worse than death. So I'm kind of glad he's exactly where he needs to be.
I mean, I don't want to go too deep into the way I believe these things should be dealt with. I hate the fact that you and I are paying for this person's existence today, if he's still alive.
Yeah.
And I just think you really, you know, screwed up a lot of people's lives, you know, and physically harmed them and killed them in some instances. I just don't think people deserve to get 3 square meals, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, it's no cakewalk in prison, I'd imagine.
No. I would not want to be there, of course. I would rather be dead, actually. It's just, you know, my own point of view. I just, I do fall into that whole eye for an eye type of thing. But, you know, of course, I'll feel differently depending on the situations.
Sure.
But I didn't go into a world of law. I'm not a judge. I just do a lot of judging.
I love that.
I'm not a judge. I'm just good at judging. So that brings us to something that is personally scary to me. I'm sure it's scary to you. Home invasion.
Don't get me wrong. It is scary to me. Yeah. It's not on my top fears at all. We're like way out in the country and we are.
What's
like,
your address again?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I feel foolish saying this, but we are like armed to the teeth. So yeah. I'm not super duper worried about this. As a woman, I am much more afraid of like being raped or something is higher on my list. But yeah, of course it's scary when somebody like comes in your house.
You know, it's funny. I was going to ask you, but then I thought, all right, that might be just too much. I was just curious if you owned firearms.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, I'm going to say, not totally uncommon for where you live and where I'm not even going to talk about even the region. But I'm in New York, right? New York is a pretty liberal state. And we have two weapons, I guess I can call them, right? We have a shotgun and a handgun, and both legally licensed, all that good stuff. And it's a real rarity, though. I mean, I'm in the suburbs of Long Island, but it's people don't. Like, I talk to my neighbors, like, well, you have a what?
Oh, really? Everyone here is so armed. It's crazy out where we live because we are out in the country. And we are, like,
hunting,
probably.
Yeah,
a lot of people go hunting. I mean, when I go on walks, I take a big gun with me just because we have rattlesnakes out here and stuff. So, like, I'll just walk down the road with it.
Kim, I think you're even cooler now. I don't know. I picture you with a sheriff's type of, like, belt on, like, with a holster.
I love it. Okay, cool. I'm not going to wreck that image for you if that's how you want to think of me. I love that.
No, but I love that. And I think that if you're not comfortable with weapons, of course you shouldn't have them. But if you, I grew up with them and I'm comfortable around them. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and it's, and it's the first thing you want when something bad happens, such as a home invasion robbery where your son is saying, I figured dad was already dead.
That's not even the most egregious thing that somebody says in this episode.
It's
mom
not. The
is
way
so
he says
ridiculous.
The mom is my favorite.
Mine too. In the reenactment, she is giving it 110%. She is getting that Unsolved Mysteries paycheck. Like, the reenactment mom is a lunatic.
The director, I think, went to them and said, look, you get one take.
You're going to get it.
Make it count.
don't walk back wishing you would have done more.
Don't look into the camera and let's not screw it up because we only have 4 feet of rope.
Oh, my God. We're in the house of Dr. David Kaywood. He's taking a nap. His wife and his oddly named son Trinity.
I love
are,
it.
It's you. You know, I hear a unique name and I'm like, oh, that's going to make it real easy to Facebook stalk you. So
did you? Oh, of course you did.
Oh, I have all their Facebooks. I have her Airbnb listing at the end of this. Like, we'll get to it.
Whoa, but can you stay in this house?
Yes. And I think we should do our first live Unsolved Mysteries rewind from her house. Jeannie Kate.
That's a great idea. That gets the happy bell of ching.
Well, he's taking a nap upstairs. His wife and son are out of the house and he is awoken by masked gunmen. I think there was like four of them there.
Right.
So at 9:45, his wife and his son come home and they hear glass breaking. And so the mom just runs screaming at these bad guys. Now, I don't know what I would do in that
situation. She goes right towards them though.
Yeah. They said in a blind panic, she just runs screaming at him. Not to stave them off, but just scared, like running into their arms.
Right, almost. But it's not it's not a possum. It's people.
Right. Yeah. So they're like, they tie her up and they tie her son up, and they're like, "Where's the vault? Where's the vault of gold?" She's like, "I don't know, y'all, because they're in Tennessee. I don't know where it is." She looks at her son. She's like, "Trinity, you look at me." He looks at her. And she says, I'm sorry, she says, "I'm your mother. I brought you in this world and we'll leave it together."
And it was just like, what? It's only been 4 minutes.
I know. And she's just like, yep, time to die. Like, it's so crazy. And he goes like, "Mama, I'm ready. I know I'm going to go to heaven. It's okay." And this must be so scary, but the reenactment is so over the top that I can't say it without laughing.
But this is the weird thing is that Tim Good walks in. No, Tim Good didn't walk in. But yeah, I think it's to accept that type of thing to each other and so verbally, if that really happened, I have to guess that what they were going through is a lot more scary than they're letting on.
For sure. And she says that they pray together, like, pray with me, Trinity, we'll get to heaven.
Right.
And it moved the armed guard so much that he started crying and walked away and decided to let them live, which is such a crock. It's something that you hear people say to kind of like push their faith on somebody, I feel like. And we learn later that there were a dozen robberies in this area over like 5 years, and they never shot or even hurt one of them. So they were going to kill the Cahill or the, sorry, Kay Woods, except for that very moving prayer. So I just find that completely hard to believe.
Now, we were going to buy a safe when we first bought this house. And then we thought, you know what? I want to just put it in a bank thing, you know, like whatever, you know, we wanted to put away. I just think it's such a weird thing. These people had to have been wealthy, right?
Yeah, well, he's a doctor, and the house looked pretty nice. Yeah, and apparently, they have a vault of gold.
$40,000 in cash and jewelry. I mean, that's a lot of.
Yeah, that's what was stolen from them. And he had like a sick computer for the time. Like, they had a lot of stuff.
No, yeah, I mean, you're right. It's just a matter of that's a lot of money to have on hand. Mm-hmm. But then again, you know what? Credit cards weren't as. What year did this happen? Do we know?
Oh, I don't.
So, I mean, maybe credit cards weren't that prevalent. Maybe he was going to buy a house. I'm not really sure. But we do get the one thing. I still think that this is a telltale sign of something where, and we see it later, where they say, we're the law. Saying, don't go thinking about calling the police because we are the law.
Exactly. So they're kind of trying to hint us towards the fact that these are law enforcement officers, maybe that have like gone rogue and decided to start kidnapping everybody. But they said that they knew things that were very specific to each person they robbed, like something that they would have had to tell somebody. They didn't get deep into it, but it sounded like, do they know these people? What is it?
Now, do you think that that might have been a reference when she was saying we were praying and the person got choked up and walked away? I mean, could it be that this is the guy who, you know, pumps their gas? Maybe they do physically know these people.
I totally hear you. I think it's a possibility. Everything's a possibility. But I think the most likely scenario is that she made that up to sound better.
No, I agree, too. But, you know, you never know. The guy could be their Cub Scout leader or something.
Yeah, but I don't know if in that moment when your adrenaline's pumping, you're holding the gun on someone, you're going to be like so moved to tears. I don't know.
Maybe he's huffing gas.
Maybe.
I would be. I mean, if I'm at the point where I'm holding guns on people and stealing their money, I may as well be high.
You've taken a wrong turn.
I have. But so you found an Airbnb.
It's actually a VRBO. So you can rent it. They have pictures of her, like it's right on the lake. So she's like holding up fish that she's caught on there and stuff. It's current. Like you could rent this now.
You put the link here. I didn't know what a VRBO was. So I didn't click on it. I thought you were trying to get me to download a virus.
Sadly, Dr. David Kaywood died in 2006. Trinity Kaywood is now the manager of a brokerage firm. I have pictures of him now, and I'll post them on the Facebook site, Unsolved Mysteries Rewind. I also have pictures of Jeannie now, and I'll post pictures of her VRBO. Why not? But something that I only saw online that they didn't show on Unsolved Mysteries is that this man named J. Dwayne Hatton, who's the alleged ringleader in all these robberies, he was actually arrested in 1994 and sentenced to 54 months in prison, and he died pretty recently in 2015.
Dug that up. Yeah, we didn't. I'm surprised that we didn't get an update to that.
We have an update where they said they caught somebody, but for our cases, the statute of limitations has expired, but they didn't say who it was.
I would love to speak to the people who are editing together Unsolved Mysteries for these new episodes.
Yeah.
How do you decide? Like, you know, I guess you have to go through all of the episodes and find all of the updates. Maybe there's a big database, like the kind you're creating for us, where it's kind of cross-reference.
Yeah.
It's like they just hand like three interns, like three boxes of papers. Like, this is all the research. Digitize it.
Exactly. I think that's probably most likely what's going on.
it's there's so much. I mean, there's so much data and there's so much to follow up on. I am curious to see what Netflix is going to do with the show, but it was supposed to be released already. So I'm wondering if it's even going to happen because these episodes, they need to be pretty timely. Things kind of move pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think because we're going back and watching Unsolved Mysteries from 20, 25 years ago, it's okay because so much time has passed. But if it's an extremely current type of thing, in just a few months, things could dramatically change and the news can be completely different. I'm just kind of curious.
You know, it's going to be easy to find a lot of people because, like, everybody has a web presence these days. And mm-hmm. I don't know, a 2020 version of Unsolved Mysteries definitely looks a whole lot different.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious if they're going to keep a similar format or if they're going to spice it up, which is something that would just not really work well with me.
Yeah.
Personally, I would love it if they just did the whole thing in the same style, like mm-hmm. soft focus and the haircuts, the glamour. That'd be awesome. Having us as the hosts.
Oh my God. Now you're talking
through Zoom. <We'll do that. laughs> No, but, this brings us to the fertility statues.
Oh yeah.
Which are, almost inappropriate for young children.
Oh, yeah. They are very naked. Yeah,
they're very, very naked. They are real in the sense that they still exist and they're on tour.
Yeah, they're like 5 feet tall ebony wood statues. There's a naked man and a naked woman. They're weigh about 70 pounds each. The man is holding a knife, which symbolizes power, and a mango, which symbolizes fertility. And the woman is holding a baby.
And they look like your basic stereotypical African statues.
Yeah, and the guy who is selling them to the guy from Ripley's Believe It or Not is like, "Ooh, a shaman put a curse on it." And it just seems like he's kind of trying to play up at that angle.
Yeah, I mean, if you go and search fertility statues, you see that there's a tremendous history. They're not terribly uncommon. But the story that is associated with these particular ones are uncommon. We're in the Ripley's Believe It or Not offices. Do we know where the office is by any chance?
I think they said it was in Orlando, Florida.
Yes, you're absolutely right. They did say that. And
which probably is sexual harassment today. They put the man
as
and
a
the
joke.
Woman as a joke in the hallway. That's what they say, as a joke. And the woman's touching it and the guy's like, "Uh-oh, you're going to get pregnant, girl. Better wrap it up." Like, basically, it's just completely harassing her. And she's just like, "Oh, I'll put out a memo to all the ladies, you know, to watch our cycles."
It's so, like, oh, you're lucky it's not 2020.
Exactly. I know. This has Me Too written all over it. But
yeah, the definitely inappropriate comments. Even just placing them there thinking it's a joke is a little bit strange to today's standards.
People start popping up pregnant left and right in the Ripley's Believe It or Not office.
And what was in 13 months, 13 people?
Yeah, and one lady like tripped and fell on it, and she said that her and her husband were practicing birth control and they still got pregnant.
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing. You know, these are not, what is it called when Mary Magdalene became pregnant?
Oh, where, Immaculate Conception.
Yeah, it's, you know, 2 to 10 go type of situation. And
yeah.
It's not like, you know, if you touch this thing and you're thinking, "Oh boy, I'm going to get pregnant now," and then, you know, go and take care of business on a weekend, you're not exactly, it's not the statue, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it is a placebo effect, like, in the highest degree. But I'm a firm believer that, like, what you believe will happen. Like, you're allowing... This is going to sound so hippie, but
like
you're
willing
allowing
it.
Universe. Yeah, exactly. To make this stuff happen. So if you go and you cannot get pregnant and you're stressed about you can't get pregnant, and then you go and you rub down on these fertility statues, then you know that you have the power of them behind you. So all of a sudden you're going to relax and you're going to become pregnant. Like,
right.
That's what I think's happening here. And when they interview the women at the end, they're like, "I hope it's my turn. I hope I'm next. I've had so many miscarriages." You want for them to be pregnant because they want it so bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally think it's more of a placebo effect.
It's a fun story.
Yeah, it's very lighthearted. We needed it at the end of this one.
The statues even popped up on local news. I was going to play a little clip from that. Whoops.
That's how it happened. We found these purchased them, and Boats have been bringing them on tour to all of our Ripley's ever since.
Wow, that is fascinating. So carved in 1938 by an Ivory Coast tribe. That is
yes.
really cool. I wonder what fertility doctors think of this.
But anyway, that's in Baltimore. It's on tour. You know, of course, Ripley's museums get these type of things all the time.
Yeah, if you want to see them, they're currently in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. As of 2020, 2,000 women have claimed that this has gotten them pregnant. And I did a quick little Facebook search, and I found numerous posts of people with holding like their Ripley's ticket and holding a positive pregnancy test.
No like, way, really?
Yeah, I'll post them on the Facebook page. But they are like, the statues worked. The statue. Even one person was like, "This was not our intention. We touched it as a joke," and they showed like their third trimester picture. So,
thank God. See, like somebody with like 19 children.
Exactly. Damn you, Ripley's!
It won't stop. So. But yeah, it's a fun story. I don't know if I fully believe in these type of things or curses, but I think you hit the nail on the head. I believe it's a real placebo type of situation. It's a good story too. You can tell everyone. Actually, if you have a child through this statue, if like it's responsible, you should get free admission to Ripley's museums.
I think that's fair.
Ripley's museum. We went in Canada, and it wasn't cheap. It was like $25 per person, and it was like maybe a 15-minute walkthrough.
Dang.
But it was all right. It was fun. Yeah. My personal favorites are the ones – I don't know if it's still in Manhattan, actually. But if you've never been to a Ripley's Museum, they're really, really fun.
Yeah, we have one near-ish us, and I haven't been there. I applied for a job there and didn't get it, so I'm a little sensitive with it.
Of course, you know. What you have to do is put the nail in your head.
Okay, clever.
I belong here. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's kids like it. It's a little bit gross, and it's, you know, it's a good family of attraction.
Yeah.
I guess. So I also, oddly enough, I have the entire collection. I'm looking behind me. That's why my volume is getting weird. I have the entire collection of Ripley's, believe it or not, paperback books that go back to like the 50s.
Awesome.
This is something that I've collected over the years. And I don't know. I think I have like, it must be about 110 or something. And they're fun. I don't know if you ever read those news clippings, you know, those every day Ripley would write some type of fun fact.
Awesome.
And I'm forgetting the person's name, but I should really put a link to it. There's a person that worked for Ripley who did all this research, and he was kind of a savant, and he would find out all these facts from the New York Public Library. He would go there every day from opening to closing, doing research all day, and he would just come up with all of these amazing facts for Ripley to use.
Cool.
I'm going to dig up his name because his story in general is just a really incredible one.
Awesome.
But Kim, as always, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today about unsolved mysteries.
You know what, Mark? I brought you in this podcast and we will leave it together.
Tonight, we have been confronted with an entire catalog of unexplained and unsolved events. Tune in next time as Unsolved Mysteries Rewind discusses another collection of unsolved mysteries. Until then, we can only look and wonder.